Golf Smarter number 124 for April 29, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Canadian PGA Teacher of the Year, Brent Morrison.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for pressing play for another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Stay tuned to the end of today's show because we'll announce the winner of the Hole-in-One Pilates DVD set. Also, I want to do a follow-up on the Mock Ryder Cup event at Whitney Oaks this past weekend. In a few episodes, we talked with Bill Falick about Whitney Oaks. It's a course that he was instrumental in building, in addition to hiring and working alongside Johnny Miller in the design of the course. At the end of the conversation, he talked about his 10th annual Ryder Cup event, which I was invited to join and played in this past weekend. Now, to be honest, it was really the first time I've ever played competitive golf. I've played in fundraising best ball tournaments, and I've lost a couple of bucks on friendly rounds, too, but this was the first time that I played four competitive consecutive rounds that featured two teams of 14 players ranging in handicaps from a 4 to a 21. Now, 11 of the 28 players were single digits, so you can imagine how hot the competition was. Unfortunately, my team lost in the final round, but the third round was probably the most competitive and most fun round of golf I've ever been a part of. I started hot with a birdie and played well for the first four or five holes. Of course, then I cooled off, but had some strong shots near the end. Now, this allowed my teammate and I to take and maintain an early lead, but our opponents tied us after hole number 17. So, it actually came down to the last two putts of our match. Their stud, who's a 7, came up 1 inch short on a 6-foot putt for par that would have forced a tiebreaker. My partner, who's a 20, drained an 8-footer for the jubilant win. We went nuts. It was tons of fun. Thanks to all the guys who played with us and all the great people that I met. And again, to Bill Falick for asking me to join in. If you ever have a chance to play some golf in the Sacramento area in California and want a typically challenging Johnny Miller track, you've got to check out Whitney Oaks. Last week, I promoted that Brent Morrison will be joining us today, but I have to apologize that I promoted a book called Golf Scrimmages that was actually written by Trent Werner. Trent will be on Golf Smarter in a couple weeks, but today we're going north of the border to have a conversation with Brent Morrison. Now, in 1998, Brent was named Teacher of the Year by both the Canadian PGA and the British Columbia PGA. The Brent Morrison Golf Academy has a great reputation for training players of all skill levels, but his expertise is helping junior and collegiate players take their game to the next level. This man has a lot of information to share, and we're excited to have him with us. Welcome, Brent.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Now, you are in Vancouver, Canada?
Vancouver Island.
Vancouver Island, but you are on the west coast of Canada. And so Canadian golf. Now, I've received emails from listeners in Canada frequently wanting me to spend a little more time talking about Canadian golf, and I'm really kind of confused. Is there a difference between Canadian golf and American golf?
Well,
we're all North American. United States golf?
I think one of the obvious differences is the shorter season that we have here in Canada. Out here on the West Coast, it's a little bit different as we play all year round. But once you start to get into the prairies and throughout Eastern Canada, the season is considerably shorter. And in a lot of cases, it's probably about 5-6 months of golf, especially when you start to get into Eastern Canada. So how it differs then would be when the Canadians – are into their golfing season. I mean, they're passionate about it and they go hard for a shorter period. Whereas in the States, when especially the southern states where you have the ability to golf year round, what'll happen is it becomes more like a way of life. So it's spread out throughout the whole year. Other than that, I'm not sure there would be a lot of differences. I mean, some commonalities between golf in Canada and other sports are more what I would look at. And that being the association with hockey, especially with a lot of young kids that we teach in our junior academy.
I knew we'd get to hockey sooner or later talking with a Canadian.
You got to. I mean, hockey's got to come up right away.
Yeah, it's got to come up right
away. Especially now we're entering into the playoff
right season. So yeah, absolutely.
It's an exciting time up here.
No one's talking about golf.
Exactly. So when you start to look at hockey, I mean, I won't get into a lot of the technique right now. We can certainly do that later if you so choose to go that way. But teaching golf in Canada, I mean, it's really, really important that you understand hockey. And I've been fortunate in my life to play hockey at a fairly high level. And understanding how a hockey player shoots, passes, balances himself, and uses his body to stabilize all those different movements and the reaction. There's a lot of commonalities and things that have to happen in the golf swing that hockey players just do naturally. And if you explore much of the one- and two-plane golf swings, you'll really understand that the commonality again between a one-plane golf swing and the hockey player is, I mean, it is so comparable on every level.
That's really interesting because I've played, you know, we have the 12 months a year golf down here in the southern states, and I've played with a lot of people who have claimed to play Little League baseball growing up or played a lot of baseball growing up, and you can see that in their golf swing. And I would imagine that that approach would be different from a hockey swing.
No, actually, it's pretty similar.
Really?
Again, I've played a lot of baseball, a lot of hardball too, where I when I was growing up. So the major, if you take three sports that have a lot of similarities, they would be golf, baseball, and hockey.
Wow.
And hockey and golf being the most. And the easiest way to explain it is you use the core. And baseball is largely rotational. And in hockey, when you're stick handling or when you're wristing the puck or passing, your arms always stay by your side and your arms usually never float out. Again, like a two-plane golf swing where your arms and hands set the club high at the top and really work hard to release the arms and hands in front of the body through the golf shot is a lot different than anything you ever do in hockey or baseball. And so when you look at that, and you teach a lot of baseball players and a lot of hockey players keeping their arms close to their body and utilizing the power source in a one-plane golf swing, which is the body, maintaining that connection and utilizing the core is really, really important.
Very interesting. Do hockey players who go to play golf have a tendency or a problem with too much wrist action and breaking the wrist?
No, actually, that's barely ever the case. And that's why if you start teaching a hockey player how to release their wrists aggressively, I mean, typically they're just lost. Like it's just – there are exceptions. Please understand that. However, just to generalize, I mean, that's – out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of hockey players I've taught, there's maybe a handful that I've ever taught a two-plane golf swing or really worked on releasing the arms and hands to. Because typically they're strong and they're balanced, and you never roll your wrists over in hockey. I mean, there's barely any cases you ever do that. If you look at people stick handling, I mean, for a right-handed player, the left arm stays in tight to the side, and the right hand is actually almost underneath the stick. And when they shoot, it never flips over.
Right.
If they're shooting low, they push it low, right?
It's
done more by the shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. Which again is very similar to a one-plane golf swing. So getting back to your question, then. They're trained to have passive hands, and it's not overactive hands. So to answer your question, no, I just never ever. Or if I do that, it might be for a cut lob or some sort of finesse shot, but it's never over. It's always under. Do you understand that?
Yeah, I do. I do. Okay. I think that is really interesting, and I'm glad you straightened me out on that because I was obviously very confused. which is normally the case. But do you have differences in ball flight in the northern part of this continent? Less ball flight. Well, I bet you're elevated. So, you know, some parts of the country are higher up in the Canadian Rockies and stuff. Might that be a little bit different in Canadian golf?
Well, I think the temperature. I mean, altitude obviously affects everybody wherever you are. But I think more than anything, it's the temperature as well as where you're at to sea level. And where we're out here on the West Coast, I mean, the West Coast in the wintertime now, a lot of the tournament players that I teach that would normally hit, you know, a 9-iron about 145, 150 carry are hitting, you know, really solid 8s or easy 7s in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And again, out here where we are on Vancouver Island, we're at sea level, as well as the air is very heavy and typically very damp, especially in the winter season. So the ball certainly doesn't carry as far.
Right.
That being said, you can get into the interior where the elevation's a little more and the temperature is quite a bit hotter, and the ball will travel just like it will down in the desert. So it really depends, especially in Canada. We have such a diverse climate and elevation changes throughout the country.
So let's move on and talk a little bit about the Brent Morrison Golf Academy. You have a fascinating approach in your academy in that it's different than many I've seen before, that you have a collegiate golf preparatory program focused on 13 to 18-year-olds who are looking to do collegiate golf.
Yeah, that's been a passion of mine for many years, and one of the ideas that I had to get it started was based on my hockey background.
I see.
When I was a teenager going away to play junior hockey, I had to go out of my area to play junior, so I made the team and inevitably got placed in a homestay and got into the local school system, and we had a gym component to it as well as a little bit of nutritional information, and certainly no yoga like we have now. However, it was more of a holistic approach, but the main thing is I had to go out of my local area and utilize a homestay program that the junior hockey team had set up, which is very typical in a boarding or in hockey we call it billet. So I thought it'd be really cool to do that in a golf environment. Mm-hmm. So as I got out here and got in a year-round climate, it just seemed a natural fit to build that program here. So anyways, we started that, and then I had the opportunity to come to Pheasant Glen Golf Resort here in Qualicum Beach and design the academy as well as all the amenities that surround it, and it's done directly in line and for this program. So with that, we have the technical aspect of the golf instruction, obviously, but we have a homestay department that places the kids in pre-screened local homestays with Canadian families. We have a fitness component to it where we analyze the kids, we assess their bodies, can they do what we want them to do in the golf swing, and their weaknesses and their strengths, and they have a personalized fitness program that morphs out of that assessment. We have a dietitian on staff who goes through all their current eating habits as well as future eating habits and eating for competition. We have a yoga guru. She works on our flexibility as well as mental concentration. And a sports psychologist who goes through all the obvious brain stuff that we need to work on.
Yeah,
so
and dealing
it's a very holistic approach.
Sure, dealing with teenagers, I would think that the sports psychologist part may be the hardest job to do. dealing with teenagers at all is never an easy thing. For competitive junior golfers, do you keep them in their high school level competition, or do you think that they should be competing on a different level, on junior level golf? What would your advice be to those who are thinking about getting into collegiate golf and how they should be competing at lower levels?
Well, I think like anything, you have to be very aware and realistic about where you want to go, so your short-term and long-term goals. And then like anything in life, set an action plan that's focused and realistic on that. So I always like to get kids going, you know, where they're playing two or three other sports in addition to golf until they hit a maturation point, and at that point then it can start to morph out into, you know, dropping a lot of those other sports, taking on some fitness training once they've hit that growth spurt, and from there they can try to be the best in their area, so locally, and then once they've achieved that or they exhibit that passion to go on, then they can start to go provincially as well as nationally and then internationally. And the main thing is to be realistic. I mean, I get a lot of students and a lot of parents that come in and say, you know, my kid can play. He won the club championship at my local course. He wants to get a Division I scholarship. Well, there's not many Division I scholarships out there, and if you're not a nationally ranked player, or you're not ranked in, say, the top 100 in Golf Week, it's going to be very, very difficult to do that, let alone have the opportunity to get a little bit of money to help out with your school. It's just very, very competitive, especially since you look at a lot of the recruiting now is done international as well. So it's a very globalized recruiting system that's going on, and it's fun to be involved in, and I certainly enjoy it. So getting back to the student, then if the player understands that how competitive it is, that competitive level as it intensifies has to be augmented with a very strict and determined holistic practice routine and training development program. And if it's not there, you're only going to get so far on shooting some low scores. I mean, you have to have the mental capacity to deal with the inevitable challenges that are ahead. You have to have the technique to be able to have the proper ball flight to play on, you know, a 7,000 plus yardage golf course, as well as you have to have the nutritional understanding so your body doesn't hit all the highs and lows of eating, you know, poor food or lack mental concentration by getting dehydrated at the last four or five holes of a tournament round on a hot day.
Sure, sure. We're having an interview via Skype right now, and so there is some breaking up. I apologize for that, but I think we're getting the crux of everything that you're saying. Do you feel that the parents' expectations of what can be accomplished seem to be in line with their child, or is it sometimes the parent is a little more ambitious than the child might be, or maybe even the other way around? How have you witnessed?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've seen all kinds, like every sport. I mean, I really take that as that's my job. I mean, my job number one is the role of a coach, and especially operating this academy. Number one is to make sure the parents understand what they're getting into or what their kid is getting into and what the opportunities are out there. And I'm very passionate about what I do, and I believe in all different training, all different levels. So I look at everybody. If kids coming in here have the passion and they have good marks and they understand that to get the scholarship, you need to be balanced. You need to have a holistic approach. I will never turn them down. So I don't only teach, you know, top Division I or top junior golfers, nor do I only teach middle of the road nor beginners. I mean, I really teach a blend of everybody. And that's fun for me, and it really keeps me grounded and level as well. So the expectation of parents then, whether it's an international ranked junior that is playing all over the world and at a very, very high level, it's a lot different than somebody that's just getting into it at 12, 13 with the hopes that golf might somewhere be out there. A student that is coming from an area where they golf, say Alberta, which is a big draw from what we're doing here, where they're golfing maybe, you know, four really competitive months and then a couple other months here and there in iffy weather, coming out to a full-time program where golf is their main sport that they're doing year round. I mean, it's a lot different. And a lot of times they get burnt out and they say, you know, I love the 6 months of golf, but getting into a 12-month season and competing for, you know, 6-7 months solid. I mean, it's a lot, and it's a lot different. So they have to understand that at an early age, and fleshing that out is phenomenal. So to me,
think the parent would have to learn that as well, that it's a grind for a kid, and to sustain that kind of intensity for that period of time is not as easy for the kid as it is for us.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that is a tremendous success. I mean, I've had a few students in here that came in with, you know, all the aspirations of playing tour golf, getting scholarships, and have demonstrated everything that I've asked of them, and they've done a phenomenal job. They've been present in the gym. They worked on their technique. They were out there every single day. They got the psychology. They knew that they had to battle when times were tough. It's not a time to give up. Yet, if you get overstressed and you push yourself too hard, it's overtraining, and you've got to back away a little bit and have that diversity to be balanced. I mean, they've got that. They've done that the whole time. And then they realize competition starts, and it's just, whoa, this is just too much for me. This is not where I want to go, which is awesome. And I consider that a success. So it's not just having everybody shoot under par or par. It's having young adults understand that, okay, this really isn't the path that I need to go down. But it's taught me something about life. It's taught me something about perseverance. It's taught me something about dedication, staying with something, making a commitment, and it's going to make me a stronger, more resilient person in the future and a better human being. So being kind of a bleeding heart, I guess.
No, I think you're right on.
My view with all that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on. I think that being able to teach a kid the discipline that's required for this kind of program is really important, and sometimes it's almost impossible for a parent to be able to teach that. I know that I have two sons, and the younger one was, you know, we tried very hard to get the messages across all the time, but it wasn't until he got into a high school wrestling program that when he started coming home and saying things to us that he had learned from his coach that we had been saying for years, it was like, okay, you're getting it. I don't care where you're getting it from, but you're getting the point.
It's amazing. It is. And that's one of the things. It can be, I'm not going to lie, it can be frustrating at times.
Well, so can parenting.
But it's so rewarding. I mean, it's so tremendously rewarding when these young people get it and they just go, oh, I just got that. Or the funny thing is when they say at one time, why didn't you tell me that before? And you've said it for a year and their parents have said it for 5 or 6 years.
Exactly.
But I mean, that's the cool thing about it keeps me young and keeps me going, because I really realize the importance of understanding all the different hormones that run rampant during these ages. And it's taught me a lot about me at that age too. And you know, if hindsight's 20/20, wow, I might have done some things differently too. But sure, if I can just help some young people understand through golf, to use golf as the vehicle to open their eyes a little bit to what's ahead and what's out there, you know, they're going to be successful regardless what they choose to do.
I think it's when you get older that you truly appreciate that golf is such a great metaphor for life in so many ways. Whether you started playing late or playing early, it's not till you have more life experience under your belt that you can understand how many ways golf can be that metaphor. Your collegiate golf prep program, is this small school, small classes, large classes? How many kids do you have there? And then my follow-up question is, how long is the program?
Well, we max out at 4 students per instructor, so it's a very small group. And what I've learned throughout my years of doing this, so we're in year 7 right now, is the smaller group size is a lot better for me as well as the students. It's fun to have a lot of kids around, and I mean, economically, while it might be better, it's being a little selfish myself. I love the teaching aspect. I love the aspect of being in the gym, doing the yoga, doing cross training, being around the students all the time. And I really like the opportunity to help each of them in tournament season and be their coach. And for me to do that and oversee it all, it has to be small group sizes. And by doing that, then I can honestly say that I've gave every student coming in here my personal attention at one time or another, and I've been personally involved in their whole training program. So keeping it at a small group size where it's 4 to 1 and maxing out where there's not more than, 15 during each session, so each 2-hour session, 3 days a week, I mean, affords me the opportunity to get to know them and allows me to stand behind the program that we're delivering, that we said we were going to deliver.
Sure, sure. It sounds like a phenomenal program. I have to believe that there's some, and this is, you can't make a blanket statement, and I understand that you can't make a blanket statement like this, but there are got to be some students or young players that it's better for them to not have their parents coach them. And of course, the most obvious one that comes to mind is Michelle Wee, where, her father's in there being her head coach, or her mother's there all the time. And sometimes you just kind of look at it going, let someone else take over for a while. You may be giving her the wrong advice sometimes. Although she is at Stanford, that's she's doing okay.
There you go. She's doing fine.
Yeah.
But on a competitive
level, sometimes it seems like they're making wrong choices.
I don't know quite about. I wouldn't say they're making wrong choices because I think everybody's there for the right thing.
Okay.
I really look at, if you look at, again, a holistic approach and you look at your life, I mean, it has to be balanced. And when you look at different roles, the role of a coach and the role of a parent and the role of an athlete, in a lot of cases, they're a lot different. And one has to be challenged while one has to be nurtured. Mm-hmm. And I think the main role of a parent is to love and provide unconditional love and support, largely financial, to their children. The role of a coach in a lot of cases is to build confidence and to break them. So if somebody's really up on a high and doing really, really well, and they need to be brought down to be taught something, and it's just, no, this is working. Well, it might be working now. The coach can realize that it's not going to hold up under X situation or X circumstance down the road. So it's a necessity that you break the student then, and then to teach them the skill to then build them up so that they can be better in that case. Well, if there's something happening at home or with a personal relationship, the coach doesn't have to be the one, or in a lot of cases shouldn't be the one, to providing the unconditional love and the support that that child needs at that time. So if you're crossing those paradigms, I think it can cause some miscommunication at times for the student athlete.
Very well said. I really appreciate the way you put that, because you do make valid points all the way across there. Is it sometimes harder for a student, a young player, to work on their mental game? I would think that a lot at that age, when they're excelling in that sort of program, when they're excelling in golf, they have a lot of natural physical abilities, but the mental side of the game may be a lot tougher for them. And you have a sports psychologist on your staff. Where does that fall into play?
Well, that's a tremendous part of golf, as you know from your shows and all the work you do. I mean, the mental aspect and strategy and playing the game is so important. But in golf, a lot of times we get caught up in a lot of the technical details. And what happens is, while they're important, learning how to play the game and get the ball in the hole is really important. So that being said, I mean, having a strong mental game and really understanding the need to have long-term goals, and in a lot of cases, having the short-term success isn't necessarily beneficial for the long-term. So a lot of times there's an inevitable grind that has to happen, and you have to go through that. With students at that age, getting back to hormones and the impatience that these humans have at that part of their life, what happens is you really have to allow the time for them to understand that, you know, this isn't going to be a short, quick fix. This is going to take you a while. You're going to have to grind through it. It's going to be hard. You're going to have to persevere. But when they get short-term success, that's very, very difficult for their minds to understand, especially since the part of their brain that's responsible for reasoning hasn't developed, and typically doesn't develop until you're 23, 24 years old. In a lot of cases, it's a lot later. So that being said, trying to get people that the brain capacity isn't developed yet to understand, you know, the need to stay with it and train harder and longer, and it is going to take longer to get it. That takes a lot of patience.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Again, being a parent of boys and knowing what teenage life is like. But let's just clarify that the Brent Morrison Golf Academy is not just for a college prep program. You do offer full range of instruction for adults as well in multiple locations up in British Columbia, correct?
Yes, we have two locations in BC. One is at Big Sky Golf and Country Club in Pemberton, just a half an hour outside of the world-class Whistler Resort. Mm. And the other one is the College Prep or the Junior Academy, which we also do adult schools. And that's at Pheasant Glen Golf Resort in Qualicum Beach.
And these schools are private, semi-private, and classroom situation for golfers for multiple days at a time?
Yeah, there's all sorts of different programs from an individual can come to a golf school at either location, adult or junior, or we have a couple of golf schools. We have corporate golf schools, as well as individual custom programs where people can just come for a day or half a day or 5 or 6 days. So it's a real full range program at both academies.
Okay, fabulous. Well, your list of credentials are exceptional, and the college prep program is just fascinating. And I appreciate the time. Again, it's the Brent Morrison. That's BrentMorrison. BrentMorrisonGolf.com is the website. And you could check the show notes or the Golf Smarter blog to get more information and links to his website. Brent, thanks so much, and best of luck. I think it's a fabulous program, and I hope to hear somebody lifting a mug or a cup with the kiss going on as they win and say, I got everything I learned from the Brent Morrison Academy.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it was great. Thanks so much again, and best of luck to you. Now, you may remember when Scotty Cameron and Frank Thomas joined us for a couple of episodes of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast. We were talking about putters, obviously, because Frank has created the line of Frankly Frog putters, and Scotty Cameron is legendary. But Frank is also quite outspoken about the state of the game and its future. If you remember, Frank was the technical director for the USGA for 26 years, so he's been right in the trenches for a long time, and he really knows what's going on. Well, next week, Frank will join us to talk about a lot of topics, including the state of the game. Now, before we announce the winner of the Hole-in-One Pilates DVD, I had got a great suggestion from J.R. Holtz in Medford, Oregon. We've all read many reviews about clubs and products that are reviewed by what I consider jaded journalists. These guys get a ton of product. They're looking at stuff all the time, and they don't really relate to the amateur golfer because they're talking to PGA people. So I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with some of their reviews. So here's the idea that JR had. What about reviews by the average golfer? What about those people who've received free product on the Golf Smarter podcast and the Golf Better podcast? Now, of course, the tendency would be to praise the product because it was free. But after you've used it for a while, are you still in love with it or not? And why? Anyway, if you're one of the nearly 50 people from all over the world who's won something on Golf Smarter or Golf Better, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com and send me your review. Once they start coming in, we'll post them on the Golf Smarter blog and we'll put a section called Product Review. Also, if you'd like to share any thoughts that you have about any products that you're either in love with or just despise, we'd also like to post that on the blog as well. So again, click on the Hey Fred button at golfbetter.com. All right, well, we've received 254 entries to our drawing for the Hole-in-One Pilates 2-disc DVD set, and I emailed Kenny this morning and asked him to pick a number between 1 and 254. And the winner is Debbie Wesson of Longview, Texas. Congratulations, Debbie. We'll be mailing you the disc. Our quote of the week is brought to you by caddytips.com. Download, print, and play. It's just that simple to play your favorite course with instruction from professional caddies. Now, as a listener to Golf Smarter, you get a 50% discount of any course that you download. So check it out at caddytips.com/golfsmarter. That's caddytips.com/golfsmarter. caddytips.com/golfsmarter. The winner of 3 free downloads from caddytips.com is going to be Jim Hubble, who heard this quote recently on the course when someone said, "Hey, you got a ball retriever? I had to get mine regripped." If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, this is Michael Anthony inviting you to join me on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. Each week, I'll provide you with tips and insights on how you can lower your score using the Mental Keys unique mental training program. Are you having trouble taking your practice game to the golf course or making those pressure shots? Tune in and I'll show you how to improve your mental game and lower your scores.
Golf Smarter Tips podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.